Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, Dad. How you doing?
Well, hello, Tater. I'm doing just fine. How about you?
Doing all right. It's another beautiful day up here in New York. Had a spate of good weather.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've got nothing but hot and sunny weather here. No rain for about the last week, and it's just been, it's been beautiful. But it's been like 85 to 90 degrees, but no humidity, so it's really hadn't been too bad.
Yeah. It's been an adjustment, I will say. I forget, like, I every time it gets warm, and I run every day, and, like, the first run I do in, like, 80-degree weather, I what's wrong with me? I can't... How did I go from, like, hitting, like, a good, like, you know, I don't know, 7:45 clip on my miles, and now I'm, like, a whole minute over? What happened? Like, oh, it's 15 degrees hotter than it was yesterday.
That makes a difference.
I don't factor it in at all. I just get really down on myself. Like, oh, wait, weather.
Well, I haven't even gotten used to it being hot yet. It's like we had to be at the park for rehearsals last night. And we were rehearsing till 9:30, so I brought along a sweatshirt to put on because it has been that by the time the sun goes down, you start needing to put something on. And I haven't gotten used to the idea. It's still 79 degrees at 9:30.
Mm. Yeah, it was the first, just the other night, it was the first night I went to the corner store to get some cat food, and like it was dark out. And I bundled up, and it was like that, you know, like that first summer night that it's nice out, and like the air smells like summer. Like it just, there's that, just that warmth hanging in the air. I was like, oh, I miss that feeling.
Well, I know what you mean, because right now we've got, because it's been so hot and dry for like a week now, you go outside and it's like it is on those late summer days, like with the dog days of summer. When it's still the heat, but it's like late August, early September, and you still got that heat out there, and the bugs are making those noise where it's this constant drone going on from it and everything. And you walk out there and you hear that, and it sounds more like a late summertime than it does technically still spring.
Is that, you mentioned the bugs, and I don't really know much about this, but I keep seeing articles about the cicadas are back, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Every article I've seen about this, and I've maybe only seen three, come across like my dashboard or something, but they're all involving eating the cicadas. And I don't remember that being where the dialogue goes. Like, oh, all the cicadas are going to be everywhere. Creative ways to cook them. What are we doing?
Yeah, I saw, we saw that last night on TV. We're like, what? I think I'll pass on those.
I've eaten some bug tacos, but I don't know why it's like, I don't know. It's just an odd. That's the bulk of what I've seen. It's fine if that's what you want to do. No judgment. But that seems to be the consensus response. Like, oh, a rare event that occurs once every, what, 17 years?
Yeah.
Break out the frying pan.
Well, I saw something that made me think of you. I saw that where somebody was taking, you know how they shed their shells and leave like a brown cicada shell behind?
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say, but yeah.
Somebody was creating art out of those and making like monsters that actually stood up out of these cicada shells. I'm like, that looks like something Taylor would do.
That was terrifying. Yes, I saw those. Those looked like aliens, like from the movie Aliens, like weird, creepy monsters. I love
that. That was really creative. I couldn't believe that.
Something,
but you know, we have all these disasters that are occurring. We have murder wasps that are occurring and, you know, these kind of things. And then I read on there the other day that there's a fungus that's attacking these cicadas. And it's there. And the way, the headline was fungus turning cicadas into salt shakers of death.
What?
I don't know. I didn't get to read the article. I just saw the headline. Okay. And I'm like, what? What are we doing? What are we doing to cicadas that they're salt shakers of death? to who?
I mean, that is concerning in of itself, but that every other article is about eating them. I feel like this is these two schools of information yeah. should meet up and have a conversation.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what that meant. I don't know if it meant to other bugs or to trees or to people. I don't know. But it made me want to not get near them if they're shaking salt.
Well, just don't use them. Don't use them to rim your margaritas, I guess.
I guess not.
We are not talking about bug drinks today. I couldn't really, had the passing thought. Well, I guess we should make some cocktails with cicadas, but I don't think that's ethical. No,
I don't want to do that.
Different topic here. But I thought we could talk about wheat beer, one of my favorite styles of beer to drink in the summer.
And for me, after Guinness, the next thing I would pick is a wheat beer. It's normally my go-to, because I like them because they're light and sweet and, citrusy sometimes. And they're just a good beer to drink in hot weather.
Yeah. And now, we're going to, as we talk about wheat beer, and we'll get into all of this as we go on, but there is a lot that falls under the umbrella term of wheat beer, because that is really what it is. I think the wheat beer you're describing and that I'm thinking about when I think of what I like to drink in the summer is probably more specifically like American wheat or Hefeweizen, some of the lighter styles. Because like when we talk about, for starters, what is wheat beer? It's really this very broad category consisting of many distinct and distinctly different styles, all of which have stricter guidelines. But basically just any beer that is made with a higher proportion than normal of wheat in the mash build. So usually it's like the low end around 30%, but then it goes up from there. They fall, for the most part, into the ale category of things because they have that top fermenting yeast. That means the yeast sits on the top of the beer vat. And it's fermented at a warmer temperature. So that is sort of the very loose idea of what a wheat beer can be.
But I did learn a lot getting ready for this, because in the past, I've used the term wheat beer, wit beer, Hefeweizen, used all those pretty much interchangeably. And while they are all wheat beers, those beers are distinct in how they're made and what their ingredients are, to where they're not really the same thing.
Right. Well, yeah, right. Some of these terms that wheat beers are they designate where it comes from. Some designate how it's made. So in that sense, it does get confusing, because I use them interchangeably sometimes too. But sometimes using a term refers to the fact that it's made, possibly in Germany or in France. And sometimes it means, oh no, this is a wheat beer, but it has this added to it. So we'll break a little bit of that down. But I think the general confusion is fair, because I think a lot of us have it in America. You probably know your wheat beer in Germany.
And I think it's only right for our video that I just have to drink one of every different kind.
Is that? Oh, okay. Well, I was going to make some nice beer cocktails. I guess you could just go on an international tour of wheat beers.
And by the time I get to the last one, I'll be like, I don't know what it is. I don't care, but I'm drinking it.
Wheat.
It is wheat. There
it's
goes.
Got some wheat in it.
That's right.
the history behind wheat beer, I think, is really fascinating, in that it is pretty soundly the oldest beer we know in the world. Like, even before we formed civilization, when we were still foraging, one of the things we were foraging for was not modern wheat, like the early predecessors of wheat, but that was among the things we'd forage for. And it's assumed that because basically once we set up crop growing, we were fermenting rough fermented beer type things from this early wheat, that we were probably fermenting it even before civilization began. Like, probably the origins of fermentation go hand in hand with the origin of, humanity, you could argue.
Well, beer is probably just maybe second only to the wheel in the inventions for man's progress and how we dealt with each other.
Well, possibly. I do think, and I've heard this argument made by much more valid historians than I, that you can't contribute the whole of human civilization to we settled down so we could get drunk. But at least one of the impetus behind it was, we want to settle down and grow crops. Yeah, we want bread, but we also want beer.
Oh, yeah.
Or wine, in the case of like ancient Chinese civilization. Yeah. So that we had this knowledge, and then we wanted to cultivate the crops for these things. It was one of the factors.
So you got to have something to wash that bread down.
Exactly. Now, these our earliest records, like our earliest recorded mentions of beer, would have come to us from the ancient Sumerians of Mesopotamia, one of the oldest known civilizations on Earth. They had evidence of beer brewing during this time around like 3400 BC. There's like we have this drinking vessel that dates back to then that it's still encrusted with some fermented residue that suggests they were making beer. And it has like a, you know, drawing of two women drinking beer through straws on the exterior of it. Further evidence dated to 1800 BC is the first recorded recipe for beer, which is inscribed in ancient Sumerian as part of an ode to their goddess of beer. They had a goddess of beer who was Ninkasi. Ninkasi was described as being born of sparkling water and brewed beer daily to satisfy desire and sate the heart.
Well, that sounds like it worked to me.
Yeah.
That's the way to my heart with a fresh brewed beer.
Well, and she understood that. This tablet was called the Hymn to Ninkasi. And it was cool because it's both an ode to the goddess, but then as it goes through like kind of describing what she does in order to make her beer, it's also effectively a recipe encoded in this story. You know, it talks about how basically you convert the grain to like a bread before fermentation. You'd add grapes as well as honey. And then this gruel would be allowed to ferment and then consumed unfiltered. So, you know, referencing back to those ladies with the straws, you would have needed a straw at the time.
Yeah, because all the stuff that made it ferment is floating on top. So you stick the straw down to the bottom to drink the good stuff. You don't want to chomp into the top.
No. It's kind of an odd sort of like a beer gruel. But,
they would stand around like a big vat, and all of them would have their straw, and there'd be like splitting a soda at the soda shop with two straws, but there was a beer vat.
Maybe. I don't know about that. But definitely, yes, it would have been a far cry from modern wheat beer. But if you want to get into like the closest style to what is today, it would have been a version of a wheat-based fermented beer.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's interesting to note, and Dad, this was before your time on the podcast, but a couple Halloweens ago, we talked about sort of in our episode about the origin of beer in Europe and how it relates to witches, and that for, you know, early on, the craft of beer brewing was a woman's job. It gave her an important role in society. It gave her some agency, the ability to produce money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that in this time, in the time of the ancient Sumerians, Ninkasi, of course, being a goddess, was also sort of a symbol for what a Sumerian woman would take part in, that part of her tasks, part of her position in society would have also been to brew the beer. So I do think that's interesting that we have these origins of beer making in the hands of women. And then, you know, in modern times, it gets taken away and now it's all manly men running the brewery because there's money to be made.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah.
But I digress. Now, of course, our modern association with wheat beer is probably Germany, which that's where most of the prominent, you know, beloved wheat beers come from today. And now, of course, there it's called Weissbier, is how you'll hear it referred to. And that's the origin for the word wheat and white are the same. They have the same root word. So Weissbier, white beer, wheat beer. This is just the German term for wheat beer, so still sort of a loose term.
Yeah, and all of them from the different origins have their word for white as far as a wheat beer because it was a lighter beer. Most of your others, your barley beers, were a darker color, anywhere from brown to amber to red, somewhere in there. So this was considered a white beer.
Well, yes, but that doesn't always work for you because you'll have like a Dunkelweizen.
Right.
So Dunkel means dark, Weizen means white. So a dark white beer might sound silly, but it is expressing, because like I said, there's that wheat and white kind of mashup. So when we say white beer, we're not really saying white as in the color. We're more saying white as in the the style that is derived from wheat.
Right. Well, but when they added that, they knew what they were doing. They knew that they were darkening. It was still the white beer, but they were darkening it with the process that they were adding.
Yeah.
And that was where the term originally came from, though.
Well, like I said, that's the wheat has the same root as white. Mm-hmm. So, similarly to, as we talked about with the Sumerians, we have a pretty deep archaeological history of beer brewing in Bavaria. The areas that would now by modern day associate with wheat beer. This dates back to around 800 BC. We have evidence of brewing. This comes in the form of residue left that was probably from a dark wheat beer. So actually, on topic, a Dunkelweiss, that was found in a jar at a Celtic burial mound. So they also were already making not just wheat beer, but different styles of wheat beer far back in in the early days of civilization here in Europe. Wheat was utilized in brewing for centuries in Europe, but wheat beer was fairly popular in the 12th and 13th century. And then it's in the 1500s that wheat beer gets a historical boost in relevancy. So, there is this a noble family from the village of Sorzach, the Degenbergs, and they wanted to obtain the sole rights to brew wheat beer throughout Bavaria. So you had all these other dukes around that agreed. Didn't seem like a big deal at the time. Fine, you can be the only one to make wheat beer. Other people continued to make wheat beer anyway. It wasn't a very enforceable law because you had a lot of these little breweries out in the middle of nowhere making their own beer.
Right.
Like, it is what it is. But as the style grew in popularity, it was actually causing shortages of wheat for bread. So there was another duke in that area, the Duke Albrecht, who deemed that the wheat beer was it was causing this problem, and he called it a useless drink that neither nourishes nor gives strength, but only encourages drunkenness, and he outlawed its production.
Wow.
However, there's this little loophole here, because he and this other duke, they're on the same level, he couldn't break that agreement that had been handed to the Degenbergs. So, in effect, he made it so they really were the only ones that could brew the beer.
Because nobody else could then.
Yeah, now it was illegal. Now it could be punished. It wasn't just this sort of decree. It was this thing that could be punished. So the Degenbergs continued to dominate the wheat beer scene and reap a very mighty profit as it became really the dominant popular style of beer at the time. And the other dukes could do nothing about this until the head of the household of the Degenbergs passed away without an heir. And so the contract reverted to the other nobility. The Dukes of Bavaria continued to hold a monopoly on the beer, but it was mainly the Wittelsbach family that kind of took it over and ran with it. They were the first to open wheat beer breweries in Munich. They kind of helped spread the continual popularity of it. And for some 200 years, wheat beer was solely produced by these noble families. Really up until it started to kind of fall out of fashion in the 18th century, that's where you have another very well-known German beer develop and come into prominence, and that's the Pilsner. Became sort of the overwhelmingly popular style and remains so.
I like Pilsner.
Yeah, classic German Pilsner, crisp, clean.
Mm-hmm.
And it also was kind of more advanced technology, like the unfiltered wheat beers of the past were a little, passé then. You had this nice new technology making these Pilsners.
Mm-hmm.
In response to this, the nobility had started to sell off a lot of their exclusivity contracts to monasteries and private breweries. The beer just no longer seemed worth preserving for themselves. And really few of these new brewers had much help or had much success with wheat beer until 1872. When George Schneider purchases the rights and sets up shop in an old brewery in Munich. Now, if you're a wheat beer drinker, you might recognize the name Schneider.
Schneider?
Have you ever had a Schneiderweiss?
No, I can't say I've ever had a Schneiderweiss.
Oh, well, Schneider is still a very prominent, amazing brewery located in Germany that still produces fantastic beer. So their roots are really here in, in saving the wheat style, because they had the recipe. They kind of kept on believing in wheat beer for a couple decades of pretty rough sales, mm-hmm. you know? They just kept making good beer and, like, slowly growing their sales, slowly growing their profit, very modestly over a long period of time, really up until, like, you know, by the 50s and 60s, it was, like, wheat beer was barely 3% of the beer consumed in Germany. And then, like, you hit the 60s, and there's this very unprecedented return to popularity. It's kind of been conjectured that there was this sort of, like, a fashionable return to things being, like, natural that took over in the 60s and into the 70s, and that brought back these sort of lost, quote-unquote, styles of beer, of which wheat was one of them. But Schneiderweiss was right there and ready to go. And, you know, saw, like, they were front of the pack when it comes to being on the wheat beer trend, because they'd been there for a long time and established. And, yeah, and the popularity of wheat beer, of course, increased. Now it's, like, 10%-ish of the German market, but massive part of the German market, massive part of the European market. You know, obviously, of the, like, it's big in Belgium, it's big in Denmark. And of course, in America, it's massive too. Wheat beer is incredibly popular in America.
Well, that's what that goes right along with one thing that I was reading about. It said in Belgium that wheat beer was once an everyday drink of the region. I mean, everybody drank it every day. But by 1960, it was a dead beer. And then a man named Pierre Selles came along, and he resuscitated and nurtured the style back to health and created the Hoegaarden brand. And then he later moved to America and developed Hoegaarden over here, selling it as a wheat beer. So this Peter Selles, not only did he bring back Hoegaarden and bring that to America, he trained a young man named Keith Villa, who was a brewer that was sent over to learn how to make wheat beers. And it was really part of a project. He was going to college, and he got taken in as an intern with Coors. So he went over and learned about it, and he came back, and he developed Blue Moon. And that's where that came from. It was from the guy that created Hoegaarden. And so he came back and tried to sell it, and Blue Moon, when it first came out, was a total flop. And it's because most people, like we talk about, a lot of these wheat beers are crisp and clean, and they're kind of clear and everything. Of course, Hoegaarden is the same way as Blue Moon. They're unfiltered wheat, so they're very cloudy. And the American palate was not used to seeing this. They thought there was something wrong with the beer. Now, one of the key things that over there in Belgium with the Hoegaarden, so they used coriander and curacao orange peel. Now, he thought that the orange peel, the peel that they were using, made it too citrusy. And he wanted to use something sweeter, so he changed it to the California Valencia orange peel that they used in their mixture. So he was, of course, employed by Coors, but he worked in his own brewery. This brewery was not a part of the Coors brewery. So he came out with this and tried to market it. Well, after about 2 years, Coors tried to cut him off because they thought this was a flop. It wasn't going anywhere. Nobody liked it. Coors didn't like it. The people at Coors, they drank it. They said, it's a terrible beer. We don't like it.
So, what was the time period for this? When are we talking in the May?
This was in 1995.
Okay, that makes sense.
So in 1995, so he started trying to figure out, how can I make this more appealing? He said, you know, that the Valencia orange was to him the key to the success of this beer. So that's when he got the idea of going around and telling everyone to garnish the beer with that orange slice, which that's unusual. Most bars at that time might have limes, they might have lemons, but they didn't have orange to garnish drinks. So he started recommending that they use oranges, and a lot of the bars, they were like, well, we're not going to go out and buy oranges just for this guy's beer. We don't even have many people ordering it. So he started going around and had all his salesmen go around and were delivering free oranges to all the bars that were buying Blue Moon from him. So the other part about the orange was that it was kind of a conversation starter. People would look down the bar and say, hey, what does that guy have with that orange on it? Well, it's this new beer. So people would say, well, let me try one. So it was a slow builder, but finally the thing caught on. And it became the most famous wheat beer and really started the wheat beer production in America.
Well, it came at a smart time because that was crossy when you have like the craft beer. Well, I mean, that really started in the 70s and 80s, but the explosion of the craft beer marketplace, that's really what gives Wheat Beer and Blue Moon the little push they needed, because suddenly American beer drinkers weren't just interested in Budweiser and, you know, Miller. Right. They were interested in different flavors. But I do want to comment on that. Orange is an interesting, it's a contentious piece of American booze history, because outside of that, that's right. And I've served many wheat beers with an orange or sometimes a lemon perched mm-hmm. on it.
Right.
And if you ask for your beer that way in Germany, you would definitely get a dirty look.
Oh, yeah. Well, they said that in here, that all the German, the original people that dealt with that, they said that messes up. You should drink the beer and taste the things that are in there, that garnish messes it up.
Well, specifically, and this is true, is that wheat beers have a very... And it obviously depends on what style you're drinking. But the thought is that they have a very specific nose. I mean, smell impacts taste, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bright citrus is a very dominant smell. Like, bright citrus kind of stops you from smelling everything else. Mm-hmm. It's why we use expelled, like, citrus oils in a lot of drinks, because it will impact the flavor.
Right.
So it's kind of zapping the nose from the beer. But the other thing is... wheat beers, I mean, we understand this from, like, wheat itself, have a high protein content and a high carbonation that give that tight, beautiful head that you get from wheat beer.
Mm-hmm.
But the acidity in the oils that you get from an orange on the side of a glass will completely eat up that head. It'll cause it to flatten immediately.
Well, that's true.
So to the German sensibility, putting a piece of fruit, like especially a high, like a citrusy orange or a lemon, on mm-hmm. the edge of a beautiful Hefeweizen, it's like, what are you doing?
And then one other thing I thought was interesting is when that Peter Sellis came to America and developed his Hoegaarden, he then decided to sue Keith Villa for copying his formula of beer doing it. And there was a big lawsuit about it. I don't know whether they settled it or who won, but you still have both beers, so obviously they didn't shut them down.
Well,
but I think more people know about Blue Moon than they do about Hoegaarden, although I like both of them.
I feel like they are both very similar. I don't like really sweet beers, and I feel like they both drink pretty sweet, but I wouldn't turn either one down if that was the option.
Yeah, especially draft.
And if you're getting a draft, obviously, you know, you're sometimes at the mercy of the glassware of a bar, but if you have the opportunity to drink a Hefeweizen out of, or any wheat beer really, out of those nice tall, you've seen them, they're like skinny, and then they have the sort of bell at the top,
mm-hmm.
and they it's a regular size beer pour, but it looks very big because it allows for 3 to 4 inches of foam on top. A lot of those glasses, you'll even see a foam mark. So if you're not experienced with drinking, especially like a properly poured like German Hefeweizen, and you get one and it seems like it just has an absurd amount of foam on it, that is accurate. That is correct. That is how you're meant to enjoy the beer. That foam helps keep the bubbles in. It keeps the cold in. That glass helps concentrate the bubble structure, as we talked about on our glassware episode. So it's very much designed to emphasize the aromatics and the qualities of the beer.
But I always wondered about that, why the orange was on there, what that was for. And he kind of got the idea from Coronas always being served with a lime. That's kind of where he got the inspiration for it.
What is it about the American conscience that worked for us, that worked on us twice?
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, you want to just put a nice garnish on the side.
Yeah.
Not even a nice garnish, just like a lime and a, oh, I want that. It comes with a free lime.
Yeah. Well, that's when Keith Villa said he realized he had to stop giving out oranges because he was getting calls from bartenders saying, hey, I haven't gotten my free bag of oranges this week. So he realized that the beer was selling and he didn't need to continue to give everybody oranges. They were just taking oranges. Yeah.
I will say, I mean, having worked at a lot of cocktail bars where we'll have oranges on hand to cut fresh peels for cocktails from, you get that one customer that wants an orange garnish on their beer, and you're just like,
yeah.
You've already like parsed out how many oranges you need for garnishes for the night, and you're like, oh, well, they all go. This one dude is going to drink two oranges worth of beer.
Well, Blue Moon considers themselves a craft beer because they're made in the same manner as a craft beer, an independent brewing and everything, but they are ultimately owned by Miller Coors, so therefore you can't be considered a craft beer or in any craft beer competitions when you're part of a conglomerate.
Well, I think that that's fair, though. I mean, because it's... It might be craft in mindset. It's not craft in the liquidity available to it.
Yeah. Well, I just mean it's not made in the same place.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do want to, like, kind of get in a little bit about these different types. How do we differentiate everything under the wheat beer umbrella? And as I said, it can get a little confusing because some of it is place of origin. Some of it is how it's made. Some of it is both. So, like, when we say, as I mentioned, wheat beer, broad category. Underneath that, we've got, like, Hefeweizen. Hefeweizen gets used interchangeably with wheat beer a lot. Sometimes to the chagrin of Germans who want to emphasize it's a German beer, it's a German word. Hefe is actually the German word for yeast. And this refers to this cloudy appearance, this unfiltered style. So we've got Hefe, yeast. It's yeasty, it's cloudy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Weizen. That white beer, wheat beer idea, the quality of it. And it's light in color related to that. It's low in bitterness. It's bubbly. It's like very much that kind of orange and banana and clove flavor palette you associate with like the German wheat beer. So that's what Hefeweizen is. And it kind of has that. A lot of times it's like a more natural fermentation that gives it that unfiltered yeast.
And most of them are lower alcohol. They're more from 3.5 to about 5.5. I mean, there are exceptions, but the majority of them fall in that category. So when you get a glass, you get a big glass, not just a small tulip glass or something.
Well, it's Hefeweizen is what you're going to get in that big, tall, like, dome.
Right.
It's tall and skinny with a big dome on top. It's probably still, like, minus foam, about a 16-ounce pour, classically. But it looks like a lot of beer.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have, like, the term, you mentioned it before, like, Witbier. That's white beer as well, but that's the term that we more see associated with, like, either Flemish beers or Belgian beers,
mm-hmm.
like Belgian-style Witbier. And that's the one that, not across the board, but it's usually made with unmalted wheat, and it has that spice profile that you mentioned, that coriander and orange peel.
Mm-hmm.
So still light, still sweet, but it does have some additional flavors going on in there, which by the German style would usually leave out anything other than just, you know, the bare bones of beer. As you mentioned, there are those darker beers, so like Dunkelweizen, so mm-hmm. Dunkel, dark, Weizen, white beer. Confusing, but that is just it's a beer that has a sweet maltiness, so it's like has had some toasted malt added to it that has a bit more of like a yeasty like bitterness, can have a bit of more like rich banana notes and vanilla notes to it, but it is that dark style of the classic Hefeweizen.
Yeah, I don't drink many of those. The Dunkels, I didn't identify those as wheat beers before. Like I say, I've learned some from reading this, so I usually would stay away from those because, you know me, I'm not an IPA guy. Now, Sydney's an IPA person. She will take IPAs over any other offerings. But me, I like, like I say, after Guinness, wheat beer would be my next natural choice.
Hmm.
So the Dunkel, I wasn't ever sure where that went. And then, of course, you have the Bock and Doppelbock, which means... Bock is strong, and Doppelbock is double strong.
Well, and you can have a wheat Doppelbock.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Those are all other versions of wheat beers.
Yeah.
And that's what those words mean.
And some of these, too, like they can be very high alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can have a lot of, high sugar content, high alcohol content, and be dark. So very opposite from that Hefeweizen we described to begin with. Now, I will say a lot of these beers we're talking about are unfiltered, and that seems to be a big characteristic of wheat beer, but it's not across the board. In fact, there is a style that is Kristallweizen,
mm-hmm.
Or Kristallweissbier, and that's another German term, but that is if the Weissbier is filtered, clear of sediment. So you can get Kristall.
Yeah.
wheat beer.
And, you know, most of your American wheat beers are not, they don't have the stuff in there. They are filtered because most of those are clear and clean because that's the way the American palate was. It's only in the craft beer evolution that people have started saying, hey, you can drink it and it's got shit floating in it, but it's good shit. Get your straw, like the lady sitting around the thing used to do.
I can't remember what the beer was. There was one that we sold in a bottle at one of the bars I used to work at. And this is normal. So a lot of times when we talk, the sediment is really something you experience more if you're drinking wheat beer from a bottle.
Right.
And some old styles of wheat beer even have like bottle conditioning. Like it gains flavor and complexity because it sits in a bottle. But when you pour the beer, you'll pour out the beer and then you'll sort of roll it on the bar top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to loosen the sediment that's kind of caked on the side in the bottle of glass. And you'll pour that last bit of beer out with the sediment in. Because you want that. It adds mm-hmm. to the flavor. It adds to the nose. But the look on some customers' faces when you pour out that last little bit and it's just like chunk. Like, yeah. They aren't happy about that. Yeah. Like, what was that? They're like, oh, that's the sediment. You want that? No, I don't. Or, you know, they get halfway down the beer and like, excuse me, this glass was dirty. There's something in the bottom of it. That's your beer.
That's your
ma'am.
Beer there.
That is just your beer.
Yeah.
We had to start putting it literally on the menu. We would just mark it like this beer has sediment. Like, just.
Yeah,
you know,
so that they knew ahead of time. Well, I can tell you, the first time that I had one, I was drinking it from the bottle. And you get down, like, say, the last few drinks, and I look, I go, damn, I wonder if it's supposed to be this way. And I held it up and showed it to whoever I was with there. And I think it was a Hoegaarden, too, because a Hoegaarden, it definitely has sediment in the bottom of it.
Yeah. No, it's a fairly, like, it's common, and I dare say accurate for a wheat beer to have sediment, unless you're dealing with one of these filtered wheat beers.
Yeah.
But I can see how it would be off-putting if you don't expect that.
Well,
know.
Here's the thing. You know, people, especially like my age in America growing up, you either drank Miller or you drank Budweiser or maybe a Coors, and then there was the lower tier of Natty Light and, you know, Old Milwaukee and things like that. But none of them had shit floating in them. It didn't matter how cheap they were. Pabst Blue Ribbon doesn't even have shit floating in it. That's not till the next day. But, you know, so it took some getting used to, oh, this is supposed to be there. Oh, and this tastes all right. So you have to kind of go along with it, you know. Whereas if you come up now through that, you are witnessing that from the days of when you first start drinking. So, you know, you accept that. That's the way it is. You know, we had to be conditioned off of that it's okay to drink that stuff.
Well, and that's, I think that, you know, that's, I think being open to accepting that is good. I think learning it is always good. I wish more people would approach it with, oh, okay, oh, there's an explanation. That's great. You know, some people are like, no, if I would have known that was part of it, I don't want it anymore. I'm like, but it's literally a new fun experience for you.
But
you're opening your mind.
But, you know, beer drinking, I think it has really evolved over the last, 10 to 15 years with all the craft beers, because it was like you were a Budweiser man or you were a Miller man or whatever it was. You might drink some, if there wasn't anything else available, what you normally drink, you might drink something else rather than not drink anything. But for the most part, you went in and ordered the same thing every time you went in. You know, and now, I mean, like me, I like to look around what all's there. Oh, that looks interesting. I want to try that. So I don't go in and you know, at some of these places, they got 10 beers on tap. I'll probably try 3 or 4 of them rather than just drink. Well, that was good. I won't just stick with that one. I want to try something else. So I think that part of beer drinking has changed. I think people, if I'm venturesome, because I'm pretty much stuck in my ways most of the time. So if I'm venturing out and trying other things, surely most of the other people are too.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think that is the way that we're progressing in drinking society. Once again, this is very an America-centric problem, because when you go to the origin place of these Weissbier and Hefeweizen and the variety of styles that you can encounter in beer in Europe is very broad,
mm-hmm.
and it's very normal to be educated at a young age on a lot of these you know, different styles, like to just have a working knowledge of this stuff because it's always around you. Yeah. It's a little bit newer here in America.
It is. Well, I had heard that when I was younger, you know, in my 20s and 30s. I remember somebody telling me, said, this isn't beer that you're drinking over here. Go over to Europe and you will taste what a real beer is. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I was like, what do you mean? This is beer. It, you know, it, beer is beer. How can it be different? And now I understand that.
Well, and, you know, I think I would say that, you know, while the term, while the idea of wheat beer is a very big umbrella. I mean, a lot of things can get put under there. I mean, we talked about like Goza a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And most Gozas are wheat based, so they right. could arguably be wheat beers, mm-hmm. but they're very different. If you like Hefeweizen, you might not like a sour beer. That's
oh yeah,
fair.
Yeah.
If you like a super high ABV like Belgian beer, you might not feel quite as happy with an American style wheat beer like a Blue Moon. Mm-hmm. They're very different in this category. It's a whole world of things to explore. And just because you like one thing in it doesn't mean you're going to like everything in it. But I do think it is one of the most nuanced, fascinating sort of umbrellas of beers. And it's where all of my favorite beers live. I will say that.
Yeah, I had a couple weekends ago we were out and I got a Goza beer that I would not have normally gotten. But because of our episode, I got it and it had lime and sea salt in it. And it was really good. That sea salt was so tangy on the back when you drank it. I mean, it was almost like drinking a margarita beer.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, anytime I see like some expression within the wheat beer family that I'm not familiar with, I always want to drink it because I actually like the whole pantheon of flavors there, you know. I like the super high ABV, rich, sweet ones, you know. Like, I like the Doppelbock, I like the Dunkelweiss, I like the Hefeweizen. I'm fine with, like, a filtered kind of, you know, pleasing American wheat beer. So, mm-hmm. the whole pantheon's good.
Yeah, yeah. I won't turn them all down. Anybody wants to buy me a wheat beer, I'll take it. Whatever kind it is. Yeah.
There you go. And I think it's cool also that, you know, you can know that in some way you're drinking the beer that at least helped form society. I guess however you feel about society, maybe you don't like that.
Well, maybe that's because we don't drink enough wheat beer today.
Maybe. If you're upset that we live in a society, you know where to point your finger. Wheat
that's
beer.
That's right.
All right. Over on the video, I guess Dad's going to be drinking. I mean, we've laid down about there are 15 styles of wheat beer. There's a lot. There's a lot of wheat beer out there. I don't think you can try every wheat beer.
I may not be able to try. I'll see what I can round up.
We'll try the big ones, the heavy hitters.
Hey, Aeyinger's a good one. I like that one. And that, how do you say it? Weston Steifenhaus or something like that.
Weinstoffen.
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 That one's good, and I love Aeyinger. Those are both good ones.
Right, yeah, we'll show you a whole. I'm looking at, like, I kind of made notes on like flavor notes and style notes on a lot of beer, but sometimes I think some things are better just shown, you know, mm-hmm. so you can get an understanding. So we'll go through a couple of the prominent styles just so you can get a visual idea of how they look like, clarity, alcohol content, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll squeeze in a cocktail. We'll see.
All right, you squeeze in a cocktail and I'll be sipping on the wheat beers and watching you.
Sounds good.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Yeah, I know. I always want to be like, I was like, oh, hey, Dad, how do you feel about covering any beer this week? I'm like, oh, that sounds great. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I like it.
Very different response. And I'm like, Dad, there's this esoteric liqueur that I want to talk about. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
We'll figure it out.
Can we do beer and next week, though?
I feel like it's kind of a one for me, one for you situation on this show these days, which I'm fine with. Because it's still all for me. I like all alcohol. It all fascinates me. I enjoy it all. But I like to make sure and throw you a bone.
I'm just like that old Tom T. Hall song. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Well, there you go. Well, all right. Well, thank you, Dad, for being here. I'm looking forward to drinking some beer in the video with you this weekend.
Well, thank you, Tater, for having me, and thanks for picking this topic because
there you go.
I'm looking forward to the video.
It's a little early for your birthday, so this is an early birthday present.
Well, not too early. By the time we make the video, you're just looking at 48 hours.
That's right, actually. Yeah. I was like, oh.
Really? But closer to 24 hours.
Yeah. So this will be your birthday beers. Thank you, listeners, of course, for joining us. If you would like to find us on social media, we are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. If you're doing our Patreon, we have stickers and coasters and a new bespoke cocktail club that you can be a part of with videos specially made for our Patreons and viewable exclusive to our Patreon. So check that out. If you want to email us, you can email us at meettheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to find us on Facebook, that's there.
We're on a group at Meet the Boozecast.
There you go. All right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
All right. Beer, my favorite topic.
Yeah.
I love all things beer.
It's gonna be like the tub thumping song when they all beer. He drinks a Schneider Weiss. He drinks a Weizenbach. He drinks a Crystal Bach. He drinks a Weizen beer.
That in my garden. It's a hoe garden.
Is that a thing?
I don't know. It is now.
I just TikTok'd that. I got a new campaign for you if you want to use it. It's a really good ad campaign. Yeah, you TikTok that.